Let's take our Bibles and turn to Daniel chapter 6 this morning. Daniel chapter 6. Now, this morning's message is for every one of us who has ever found ourselves in a crisis. And I want to ask you, where's the best place to be in a crisis? Before, in, or after? Before you answer that, though, I do want to warn you that in the rosy days of the past, when we think about the way things used to be, we only remember the good things. And if you've ever gone through an experience where you had a bad health diagnosis or your financial situation was on the up, you always tend to want to go back to the good old days. But there is a lesson to be learned and a God to be seen in the process of going into the pit, going down into the den, as Daniel does in Daniel chapter 6. Now, I don't think any one of us are too excited about going down into the den. And I think a lot of us would say, you know what? I would say that getting out of the pit would be the best way. That's where I want to be, on the other side of the journey. But when you go down into a pit full of hungry lions, you have to be careful because you don't always come out. Or at least some people go down to the pit, we see in Daniel chapter 6, and they don't come out on top. Where's the best place to be in that cycle? We're going to answer that question this morning. If you've got a health issue, if you are concerned about your children and about your job, about life in the world right now, if you're worried about even your next meal, I want you to see this morning from Daniel chapter 6, there is a faith principle that every one of us needs. You know, when you go to the doctor and you hear of a diagnosis that is shocking and surprising, you need to know all of the details and all of the facts. And so for the next few moments, by way of introduction, I'd like to go ahead and tell you a little bit about the adversary in Daniel chapter 6. This morning's message is entitled, Shut Your Lion Mouth. And as we look at the story of Daniel, this is, of course, Daniel down in the lion's den. Of all the stories in the scripture, we've got Daniel and the lion's den as one, perhaps, that everyone has heard. But I realize this is perhaps my first time to preach from Daniel chapter 6, the story of Daniel and the lion's den. So I'm excited this morning about the lessons and what we're going to see here. As we look to the adversary in Daniel chapter 6, I'd like to talk about what life looks like for a lion, at least to see from their perspective. Lions live in groups known as prides. That pride can be anywhere between 4 and 40 lions. An average size group would be about 15. All of this plays into because you're trying to figure out how many lions were there down in the den that Daniel was placed down into. But let me tell you a little bit about how that pride looks, what that group of lions looks like. There will be one alpha male. There will probably be 3 to 4 other males in the group, and the rest of them would be lionesses and cubs. Now, the 3 to 4 males that are there, part of the group, they have been beaten or defeated, and they're just allowed, they're tolerated around the group. It's the lionesses that are the mothers and the cubs that are there. And of the cubs, we're not counting them as male or female at this point because a lion, get this, is full grown at about 3 years of age. That's going to take them about 15 pounds of meat per day for the average male, a little bit less for a lioness. What do lions eat? They eat anything that has meat. But lions aren't really that picky. There are some things that they won't eat. You will not see an elephant, a full-size adult elephant, being eaten by a lion. You will not see them attacking a rhinoceros or a hippopotamus. And why is that? Because they're just too tough and chewy, that thick skin, and they're a lot bigger. They will not eat, incidentally, rabbits or small reptiles or monkeys or anything that just doesn't seem to be like a lot to eat. Lions don't like light snacks. Lions are very greedy, and they will kill even when they are not hungry. If they are on a hunt and another predator comes up, they will make the kill just because they can, even though they're not necessarily hungry. They are greedy, and they want to make sure that there is plenty of meat. This is beautiful, this next statement. It's the lionesses that do the hunting, Brother Jack. The female lions go out and do the hunt, and the male lions eat first. Oh, for the good old days where the women go out and do all the cooking, or the killing and the cooking, and the men just sit down and get to enjoy it. What life must be like in a lion's pride. But for that alpha male, every 3 to 5 years, there's going to be a challenger for the leadership of that group. A young cub is going to be mature at age 3. And he will fight off and fight for control. Oftentimes, the young cubs don't have the strength, or they don't have the prowess of the older alpha males, and they will end up leaving the pride to go out and find another group with which they connect and to vie for being the alpha male. In Proverbs 30, verse 30, Solomon says, "A lion which is strongest among the beasts and turneth not away for any." If you and I were out walking, and we come upon a hungry lion, as you do see in the story of Samson, lions are pretty vicious foes. They're pretty hungry. They're not too picky. And so we would be very careful around a lion. We don't mind seeing him at the zoo, but we don't want to see him out in public, and we certainly don't want to spend a night with a lion. Do you know what the greatest concern at the top of the food chain is for the lion? What's for dinner? The dream that we are going to look at this morning from Daniel chapter 6 is living the good life. For Daniel and the kingdom of Babylon, there is a new opportunity to see expansion, to see something just amazing happen, or the opportunity for the nightmare. In this case, it would be for Daniel, should he find himself in a difficult place, all alone and abandoned. But that's not the God we serve. We serve the great and mighty God who is able to shut the lion's mouth. And I want you to know this morning, as the big idea is this: no pit may swallow God's goodness. Would you join me in prayer now as we ask the Lord to bless our time in His Word? Oh Lord Jesus, we come to You this morning, and I pray that You would give us the grace and the strength in the week ahead, as no doubt we may experience some time in the pit. Lord, as we see in Daniel's life, the decisions, the commitments that he made for You, and it was because he stood for the right that he went down into the pit. And so, Lord, would You give us that tenacity to dare to be a Daniel, to dare to stand alone this morning, so that we would see Your goodness, so that others would see Your goodness. And Lord, may we not lose sight of the lesson learned down in the pit, and may others see Your goodness at play in our life through Your work. Lord, I don't know what lion we will be up against this week, figuratively speaking, but I know that You are there, that You are gracious, that You are merciful, and that You are good. And I pray, Lord, that this week especially, we would see that. Your grace, Your mercy, and Your goodness. We ask these things in Your name. Amen. So we have in Daniel chapter 6 a new leader arriving on the scene. Look with me at Daniel chapter 6 verse 1. "And it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom." Now I want to pause here this morning, because someone asked me recently, how do you pronounce his name? Is it Darius? Is it Darius? And as I did some research this week, I want to answer that question by saying it depends on where you're from. If you're from these United States, the American accepted American pronunciation is Darius. put a little southern draw on it, and it comes out just the way you would expect, Darius. But over in Europe and the European pronunciation, based upon the Greek pronunciation or the Greek rendering of it, is Darius. There is another pronunciation that's very much a mixture of the two, Darius. Whatever you call him, he is the new man in charge. And we don't know a lot about this leader. We don't know from history exactly the extent of his reign, but we do know that the Babylonian Empire has been defeated by the Medes and the Persians, and that Darius has been placed over the kingdom of Babylon. We know at the end of the chapter that Cyrus is the ruler of the Persians. And we do see here then that this leader is someone who's important, but not the highest, not the most powerful person in all of the world in the day. So it's just here in Babylon that we see the appointment of Darius over the kingdom. It seems to be that there's an opportunity for Daniel. Now, you remember last time we were in Daniel chapter 5, he just got a promotion. He was just given an importance, been recognized by Balthasar about that night that the handwriting came on the wall. And if you are in an outgoing administration, it's got to be an uneasy time, because it tends to be that we rule with this spirit of out with the old and in with the new. And that Daniel could very much see a demotion or see himself removed from the scene. But it doesn't seem to be that way. It seems to be that there is a smooth transition that's placed by the new king as he's working with the old leadership in place. And he appoints 120 princes to rule under his authority. And it is going to be under those 120, there's going to be top three. And it's going to really come down to the best candidate for the job. Speaking of, that's how we pray for our upcoming elections. Lord, please send the best candidate for the job. In Daniel chapter 6, verse 2, look with me now as we look at how the structure flows. And over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give account unto them, and that the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and the princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Daniel's character, Daniel's qualification, Daniel's execution of his job was just excellent. The right man for the job. And so he thrives during this time of transition. Now look with me at Daniel chapter 6, verse 4. Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find none occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. How do politics play out in this world today? It doesn't seem to be that we want what's best for the country or what's best for our people. We want what's best for our agenda. And Daniel, even though he is a leader of exceptional qualities, his underlings want to find a way to bring him down. So you know what they do? They use the law. Look with me at verse 5. Then said these men, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Then these presidents and princes assembled together the king and said unto the king, "King Darius, live forever." All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes and the counselors and the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute, and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, there's a change in administration, and there is a change in the function of the law now in Babylon. You remember back when Nebuchadnezzar was in power, what the king said was decreed, and that's what stood. But under the Medo-Persian rule, under King Darius, it's going to be that they are bound by the laws of the Medes and the Persians. This law could not be changed once it was put into place. And I know that a lot of times in our Congress, that our leadership, reason why we need the best candidates for the job is because sometimes they push through legislation. No one even knows what's in it. It's just too big, too long, too hard to figure out, and they'll push it through before we even figure out what all of the ins and the outs of the law are, and it creates all types of problems and challenges because we rush to judgment in haste to try to bring something to pass. Oh, it is amazing to see over these last few months how the current administration was able to pull some laws together, to make some changes, to pull Congress together, to make some very quick adjustments. That there are more promises that are coming. If we can just stay in power, we'll have more opportunity to do it in the future. And the problem that we have in Daniel's day is that when you make a law, and it's to stand forever, that it cannot be undone by the king, you need to think through all of the possibilities before you make the decree. Because there can be no loophole, there can be no exceptions. I like loopholes, don't you? I like exceptions, don't you? When I fall into the loophole or when I fall into the exception, I do not like it when it works unfavorably against me. But King Darius, he's going to experience the reality of ruling in the realm under this strategy and under this binding law, that when the king makes a decree, even the king is bound by the law. How in the world do you find a loophole? How in the world do you create a law if it can stand forever? How in the world do you free yourself from it? I know how you do it. You put an expiration date on it, 30 days. And if it works for 30 days, try it again for another 30 days. I think in the case of Daniel, the leadership realized that this is the mandate that we need, King. Everyone's going to pray to you. So automatically, Darius likes the way that this sounds because everybody's got to think about him and exalt him. But he's got to be careful because it could affect some in his kingdom, especially Daniel. So when the princes come to the king and set it up, it is going to be checkmate for Daniel because the princes know the character and they know the devotion of Daniel. Look with me in verse 9. Wherefore the king Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not challenged according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth it not. In verse 8. The law was signed and it could not be altered. And the strategy now and the purpose of the law was that only prayers to the king should and would be allowed. Look with me at verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened to his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day, and he prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Daniel sought God's direction as he always had. He knew what the law was. He's the top man in the kingdom under the king. He has to know the trouble that's going to come his way for praying to God and not to the king. Why didn't Daniel just go into his house and close his windows and make his prayers in private? He'd still be able to seek God's direction and wouldn't have to. He could compromise, I guess you could say, but Daniel doesn't. He goes up to the top of his house where you could stand down in the streets and see him, and he prays to God not once but 3 times a day. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 through 2, Paul writes to young Timothy, I exhort therefore that first of all supplications and prayers and intercessions and the giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. Paul's writing to Timothy about praying to God for our leaders. And Daniel, no doubt, is praying for God's direction, for God's insight into being a good leader. And I believe Daniel's probably praying for the king also. This new administration, as he has found himself in a pickle and in a predicament, Daniel could have easily ran from his convictions, but he stands his ground and hits his knees. Daniel's faith is on display from above. And you and I prefer when our faith is on display above the pit and certainly not down into the pit where Daniel's going to go, as we see in verse 11. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, this is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king that Daniel, which is the children of the captive of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition three times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Whew. The king has been tricked, and the trap has been set, and Daniel has now been caught, and there doesn't seem to be much hope for Daniel because his faith was on display from above. Now we see Daniel's faith is going to be on display from below. Daniel chapter 6, verses 15 through 18. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, now, O king, that the law of the Medes and the Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. Now let that resonate right here and right now. May I draw your attention to the king's words. God will deliver thee. When you go to the doctor, you've got a diagnosis that there is nothing more the doctor can do. What does he say? You're in God's hands now. There's nothing more we can do. The king comforts Daniel with these words, God will deliver thee. But this doesn't seem to be a faith position of the king. No, he knows that when Daniel goes down into the pit, Daniel's going to experience what you would expect to experience in the pit full of hungry lions. Daniel's going into the pit, and the king is going to have to look for a replacement. And it's not that he's given God a wiggle room or a way out and saying, you know, Daniel, it's not so bad. You're going to go down there and your God's going to deliver you. For an unbeliever to console you with words of comfort about your God is unsettling. Someone who's speaking from a position that they know nothing of. Now, when another believer encourages you about God's work in your life, that's altogether different. Because they're speaking from a place of knowledge and a place of relationship. When Daniel hears these words from the king, it can't be good. at least from the king's perspective, that only God knows the outcome. And so Daniel is lowered down into the pit. And I want to stop right now and ask you, when is your faith most tested? Is it in the time before the pit? When things are going well and things are going your way, isn't it easier to stand for the right when life is easy and life is good? That's the dream after all. Life before the pit, that's when it's easiest to stand as a believer and trusting God. But what about that moment that you're down in the pit? As Daniel's being lowered down into the pit now, as we look at the part of the story, the journey into your trouble, the journey into your difficult season, is that when faith is strongest or most clearly seen? Because you and I, as people, have a way of finding our life hurt and injured. And pain has a way of changing our perspective. Even the best of us, even the most good-intended of us, has those moments of weakness where we're tempted, when we're tested, to question God's goodness. God, what are you doing here? Going into it, it's not so bad. The first early moments of a difficult situation, our optimism is still good. But when you find yourself in the pit and your stay is extended, we start to question God's goodness. But when we come out on the other side of the pit, if we do in fact survive the pit, is that when faith is tested? I think in every answer, yes, yes, and yes. Our faith is important before the pit. It's easier to think about God's goodness and speak of God's goodness when things are good. It's a little more challenging to think about and to speak about God's goodness when things are going rough. But it is really easy and really great and really hope-filled to talk about God's deliverance after it's all said and done. But I want to ask you a question that is begging to be asked here in the text. Would God be any less good if Daniel suffers and dies down in the pit? Is God any less good whenever I suffer? Think about that. The story starts to make connection to our lives. And whose faith is found in the den anyway? Look with me at Daniel chapter 6, verse 17. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with his signet of his lords, that the purpose might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were there instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. The king is really distraught because he knows that the law, he's got to spend the night there. He's being judged. Daniel, this faithful leader, is going to, you know what the king is thinking. It's got him all up, torn up at night. Isn't that the way we spend a lot of our nights? I know that for me, and I'm speaking from Darius's perspective, I know what it's like to weigh out the possibilities, to stay awake, troubled, and burdened. And it's in those moments that you and I can pray more clearly as we worry about the problems. But the problem with worrying is we're doing less praying and more worrying. We find the king wakes up and arises early in the morning, and he went into the haste unto the den of lions. And what does he find? That Daniel is saved and kept. And I want you to remember that those two words are connected here. Daniel is saved and he is kept. A few moments ago, I asked you about where is faith in the den. And I want to ask you right now, what requires more faith? that God would spare me the pit if, God forbid, the laws of this land change and you and I lose our freedoms. We see in the course of a week, Canada to the north of our borders is making changes to their laws that are affecting their citizens just like this with a decree of the Prime Minister. And if our situation should change just as quickly, would we find ourselves in that faith-filled place, God, spare me from the pit? Because what I see from scriptures and what I have seen in my life and what you have shared with me from your life, and we look back throughout the ages, that being a Christian does not mean that you live a blessed life free of problems and heartaches and difficult days. But rather, you and I continue to experience life here in this fallen world with heartaches and difficult days, but we do not do it alone. What takes more faith? Lord, spare me from the pit. As though we deny the reality that suffering is a part of life here on this planet, here and now. Lord, get me out right now. And that takes a lot of faith, right? To make that cry, God, you got me in this mess, you got to get me out of this mess. Or the third option, God, as long as this plays out, may I endure for your glory and may I see your goodness. Which requires more faith? Daniel going down into the pit, Daniel landing in the pit and being surrounded by these hungry lions, Daniel spending the night in the pit, or Daniel anticipating that God's going to pull him back out of the pit. Daniel chapter 6, verse 20, and when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel, and the king spake and said unto Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from these lions? And what's the king's position? He knows what's going to be expected. There might be a few scraps of garment down inside the pit, for the hungry lions will have had their fill. But what does he see? But something completely unexpected. From Daniel's perspective, inside the pit, what's the best way to pray? What's the best way for you and I to talk to God in those moments before the pit, in the pit, as we come out of the pit? Here's how we find ourselves needing to pray inside the pit. Sometimes we pray this, God, you got to get me out. And I know for Daniel, he's trusting that God's going to meet his need and that God's going to deliver him. As the king has reminded him, the only way you're getting out of here is if your God delivers you, if he saves you and he keeps you. It's one thing to make it down into the pit. For Daniel to go down into the pit for just a few moments, maybe the lions are looking at him because there's something different about him. Maybe the lions don't want to eat kosher. Maybe they are in the pit and they're looking at Daniel and they're thinking, what's the best angle of attack? Daniel, to cry, God, get me out of that. And for you and for I in our difficult moments, God, get me out of that. I think that's justified. What about this? Lord, let me go quickly. I know that if it was you, some of you in the room, the moment that you're laying down, you're praying, God, take my life. Just spare me the trouble of being ripped apart by hungry lions. I don't think I could endure it, God. I don't like pain, and I certainly don't like to be eaten, and I don't like lions. So, Lord, go ahead and take me before it even gets bad. Get me out quickly. God, you got me into this. Let's speed up the clock. And you're not going to speed up natural law. You're going to spend the night there. But rather than pray that, even though we can pray that, Lord, let me see your goodness. And I think that's an important focus that we need as we remember going into heartache, difficult times. Lord, let me see your goodness. Because we serve a good God who knows where we're at, who does not forget us. But let's expand that prayer just a little bit more. Lord, let the king see your goodness. Lord, may I and others see what is true of you. Daniel chapter 6, verse 21, then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath set his angel and has shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceeding glad for him, and commanded that they should take up Daniel out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, no matter of the hurt was found in him, because he believed in his God. Remember a few moments ago when I talked about being saved and kept? In the story, Daniel survives the night. And think about the miracle that Daniel's just witnessed. Because there's probably the naysayers who are looking down in the pit with the king, shocked, can't come to terms with what they've seen. Maybe the thought was, well, the lions just aren't hungry. That's why he was able to survive the night. No. Daniel knows why he survived the night. The Lord shut the mouth of the lions, kept him safe. Maybe someone looking down at the pit and knowing Daniel, by the way, who is in the latter years of his life, an older man down inside the lion pit. Maybe they look down and say, well, Daniel just looks too tough and chewy. You know, people don't like to do all that chewing, and they don't like all that tough, sinewy, that meat that's to be found on an old fella. Give us some fresh meat, not that old, wore-out meat. But God shut the mouth. I call to your attention. We come to Daniel chapter 6, verse 24. And when the king commanded, and they brought these men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions had the mastery of them, and break all their bones in pieces, and ever they came at the bottom of the den. One man going down to the lion's pit. God spares him. And for all of the men who conspired and their families and their children, doesn't seem to be fair. They just convinced the king of a law, but their just deserts come to them. Actually, the just deserts come to the lions. And we find that for everyone that went down into the pit, they were immediately broken into pieces. Now, I think that speaks to the size of the pride of lions down in that pit. If every lion can eat about 15 pounds, every male lion, that's a whole lot of meat to be eaten down in the pit. And what terrible, terrible that must have been. But we do see from the scriptures that the lions were hungry. It wasn't just a coincidence. And in that moment of justice, and in that moment of Daniel's deliverance, the king sees what Daniel learned that night. Look with me in verse 25. Then the king Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and the steadfast forever. And his kingdom which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall not be even unto the end. He that delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered in the reign of King Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. What do we take away from the pit? What do I see when I go into the pit? What's the lesson to be learned from Daniel this morning? But there is an outcome that's worse than death, and that is unbelief. How tragic to go through a difficult situation, to find yourself in a pit. And rather the takeaway is that your heart has been drawn closer to God, that your heart has been drawn, hopefully, in seeing the goodness of God, and the hope that God will not forget you, nor does he forget you, and that God will deliver you, though delivery may not be how you expect. Or rather, God, how could you do this to me? You call yourself good and loving and gracious. And the testimony of someone who turns from faith, deconstruction in the midst of destruction. God, I do not see you at work in my life. You are making me miserable. I think that's a takeaway for someone who doesn't believe. Someone who did not believe. And the heartbreak of going through a trial, going through a time of testing, going through a time where we are being refined and not seeing the lesson of faith just makes that circumstance all the more heartbreaking, because we serve the God who saves and keeps. In Daniel's case, Lord saved him as he went down into the pit. And as he stood there in the pit, and as long as he was in the pit, the Lord kept Daniel. And the Lord brought Daniel up out of the pit, because we serve a God who delivers. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Daniel did not turn to the left or to the right. He bowed his knee to God from up on high, for everyone to see, knowing full well the consequences. He put his relationship with God above the consequences, because for Daniel there was a non-negotiable contest that he was not willing to give up his character, his faith, his righteousness. For it was what God had worked in him over the years, and how God had been faithful through him over the years. And Daniel was not about to quit at this moment in his life. What's the takeaway or the lesson that we should see from inside the pit? What's the takeaway? What's the lesson that you should see this week when you find out something that surprises you, that you didn't know about, an expectation, that there is a letter in the mail, that there was something that has happened where your circumstances changed? What is the takeaway when you find yourself in the pit? That God's goodness is seen clearest in the pit. It's a perspective that you get, and you don't necessarily see the same depth as you do from above the pit. And there is certainly a clarity on the other side of the pit. But Daniel's story, we see him in the pit. And we serve a God who knows where we're at and what we need. Here's our response this morning. There is no pit big enough to swallow God's goodness. And there is no lion large enough or hungry enough to swallow God's goodness. As Daniel shows us by his testimony the importance of rejecting Babylon's values. He did not buckle, he did not change, he stayed faithful. We need to make up our mind about what is right. Stand upon those principles. Lord, even when it's unfashionable and when it doesn't seem to be that this is the spirit of my community, Daniel did what was right to the point of costing his comfort and his very life. To that place where the king tells him, your God will deliver you. And then down inside that pit, I think there was a Daniel's prayer meeting that he had there with those lions. I don't think that it's always appropriate to pray with your eyes closed when you're talking to God. I find sometimes the best time for me praying is while I'm on the road. I'll just talk to God while I'm watching the road. But you know, I can imagine down in the lion's pit, this is a time where you're going to keep your eyes open. God, I know that you're protecting me, but I'm just going to keep my eyes open, if you don't mind. Will you let me have that experience? I don't know where Daniel was in that moment, but I do know that he is no longer in the pit by the end of chapter 6, that God has brought him through. In the moment of testing, in the moment of trial, stand firm. May this be our prayer. Lord, take my life and let it be only, always, all for Thee.